as your last word. And again, I'm hoping you will be able to make a future appointment to have a more relaxed conversation to tape to get a little bit deeper into some of the issues we touched upon here today. I've been talking with Professor Clive Spash. Again, he's at, what's your website?
It's www.clivespash.org.
So that's a CLIVESPASH. And again, there's some of the links, and I'll put more links on the page for this program on our website, kboo.fm. Unfortunately, voluntary archiver mechanism isn't working, so I won't be able to put that up, but you can access it through going to the schedule and looking up Wednesday Talk Radio. Thank you so much. I gotta run. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
A higher kind of love comes of age. Something good burning away rage. Look through eyes of the painted face. Warmaker smothers by his own disgrace.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Joe Hill Centennial Tribute Concert Thursday, November 19th, 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. Joe Hill was a member of the Industrial Workers of the World and wrote the classic labor songs There Is Power in a Union, The Rebel Girl, and many more. Joe Hill was executed by the state of Utah 100 years ago and will be remembered with a concert featuring Anne Finney, Citizen Band, and General Strike. Again, that's the Joe Hill Centennial Tribute, Thursday, November 19th, at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, the band will be El Cuatro Pepe y Rafael y Lily Last with cantores Elisa Rocha y Christy Jenny. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, located at 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 9:02. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, on Political Perspectives, host Stephanie Potter speaks with Salvatore Gencarelli about his book, A Man Among the Helpers, and the disconnection disease that pervades modern society. At 9:30, we hear TUC Radio featuring a talk by Professor Ricardo Winkelmann of the melting of the Antarctica. And at 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, we got Flashpoints. Max Blumenthal speaks on the 51-day war, ruin, and resistance in Gaza. And at 11 o'clock, Chris Siegel hosts The Food Show with guest Rosanna Pansino, author of the Nerdy Nummies Cookbook, and Jesus Guillen, Oregon's only Latino winemaker. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, now is a great time to become one, because when you go to kboo.fm/give, you'll find out more about our matching grant that we've got going, a one-to-one matching grant that's happening right now. So please do that. Thank you, and we'll hear a little music, and then we'll get right to Political Perspectives featuring Salvatore Gencarelli.
Oh, Hi, you're tuned to Political Perspectives here on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and I have here with me in the studio Linda Rudnick of the Earth and Spirit Council. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Stephanie.
And on the phone, I believe we have him on the phone now, Salvatore Gencarelli, who's just written a book called A Man Among the Helpers about his personal experiences with the Lakota Sioux of the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Salvatore will be in Portland this Friday and Saturday. I'm going to have Linda talk about that in just a minute. And, okay, Salvatore, we've got you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here now.
Okay, great. Okay. So I'd like to start, because this is Political Perspectives, just real quick with this whole notion. I know we just were talking just at the show before about huge, huge problems facing the world, and we're not dealing with them really in a real serious way. And I think just a tiny part of that is Bernie Sanders at the Democratic debate came out and said that we've got this threat facing us, which is after the Paris shootings, he was saying that really climate crisis is a deeper threat because people are dealing with drought, with floods, with extreme weather events. They can't grow their crops. They're flooding into cities. There's more instability. And that we're not making that connection. There's a disconnection. But I believe that in your book, you're talking about a disconnection disease, and that this disconnection that I just talked about, there's actually a disconnection that's much deeper than that. Was that sort of how you would see that?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And could you just talk about that then? Yeah.
Yeah, there's some underlying illnesses that are kind of running throughout the last bit of history with humanity, with human beings and the relationship with the earth. We've created a storyline, you could say. We've built this storyline that sometimes it's identified as a subjective reality. You know, it's a story of our relationship and how we're interacting with the world. And that story is told through English being a very powerful language in many ways, but also a very disconnected language at the same time. And that through the story we've slowly removed ourselves from nature. We've objectified our core level of relationship with the very world that surrounds us, the objective world. And in doing so, what we've eventually produced, you know, that we're now living in, is the environment is now being torn apart and destroyed by the story of humanity, by the stories that we've created. So, yeah, we've come to a place now where we can really recognize that the story of humanity, as it's been told over the last, you know, starting probably about 10,000 years, as we estimate, has been one of objectification and disconnection. And it's created a disease pattern that's now being passed on as normal from generation to generation. There's a lot of other patterns, disease disconnection patterns that go with that, but ultimately it's the breaking of our relationship with the very thing that supports us to be alive and the very thing that supports us to tell our stories. So that's a little bit about the underlying issue that I call the disconnection sickness or disease.
Right. And Linda's here. Actually, you're going to be in Portland this weekend on Friday and on Saturday to talk more about that, and actually to talk about a more indigenous approach to the healing. And Linda, could you just say quickly
sure.
What
the Earth and Spirit Council of Portland has a series called The Natural Way, where we invite indigenous elders and traditional people to come and share their wisdom. This Friday, Sal's going to be at the Tabor Space, which is on Southeast Belmont, 5441 Southeast Belmont. We do have advanced ticket sales that you can find from our Earth and Spirit Council Facebook page. There's a link there, but it's on a sliding scale and on a donation basis, and no one will be turned away. However, we do have a limit of 100 people, so I urge people to get their tickets early. And then the following day on Saturday, Sal's going to be doing a workshop, and there's more details available on the
Earth
on
and
the
Spirit
Facebook.
Council. And also on the Earth and Spirit Council website?
No, I'm afraid we're not up to date on that.
Okay, go to Facebook.
Okay.
Okay, and just getting back to Sal here. So basically what you're saying is that, as I just said earlier, Indigenous cultures, they have a higher understanding of survival and connection than we do. And I was just hoping you could just talk a little bit about that and what's, you know, how, and you're bringing sort of this modern, bringing their wisdom to a sort of more modern take on it or something in your workshop?
Yes, yeah. So just to recap my background a little bit, I worked on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation and with this particular healer that did what we call Uwipi ceremonies for up to his passing last year for now 28 years. So coming kind of from the modern perspective, the modern culture when I was 15 and really recognizing that there was something seriously wrong even at that age. And I think we can see that in many of our young people nowadays, the teenagers that are recognizing fully in maybe even a more complete way than the adults even see that there is something desperately wrong with the conditions of humanity and what's being produced, you know. And again, the terrorist attacks that are occurring, the last one now in Paris, is just another symptom of that bigger disconnection problem that we're having. And so I recognized that at 15, so I went on this journey to find out what could be done about it. And it's been the motivating factor throughout my entire life.
You had a vision, right? Some kind of a vision?
Yeah, I use that terminology and understanding, like, the terminology such as vision, you know, it's up for interpretation.
Uh-huh.
What I would call it is just an incredible moment of insight and also understanding, you know, the trackable patterns of our relationships, you know, and this is humanity as a whole, their relationship and our relationship with nature and with the world that supports us. Where is this going to go if we continue in this pattern? And in that moment of kind of deep understanding and insight, it was fairly overwhelming, but it also set a tone within my life that then guided every action that I've taken since that point on. Really looking for how can we change this pattern? Where did it come from? What is it about? And then how can we change it?
Okay, so
and
yeah,
consistently, I've been guided and brought into opportunities to learn what it means to be Indigenous. What does it mean to be Native? What does it mean to be a caretaker of the land, of place, of community, and of oneself? And how are all those parts tied together so that we can actually live in this world and ensure the continuation of human survival on this earth, and the continuation of all the species of this earth, you know, in perpetuity, you know, forever. So what is our relationship and responsibility to that? And what I've consistently been guided to and what I've consistently found is that the Indigenous people fully understand and recognize that. And what I've also been shown over time and what I've learned is that in the modern perspective, we're taught from a place of disconnection. We're taught from a place of objectification, from resource management, from let's say, logical mind, linear thought.
Usefulness.
And yeah, yeah. However it's useful in the moment that serves, you know, humanity or serves us as individuals or serves us as a collective society. And this pattern has, it's actually increased in volume. It's increased in the sickness, the disease process, and it's brought us to this place now where, you know, human beings are willing to strap bombs to themselves and walk into crowds and blow themselves up and whoever, you know, children, women, adults, elders, it doesn't matter. And so this is like, you know, a very pinnacle and current expression of the disconnection sickness, to no longer be connected to our fundamental network and neurology of being a human being. Because it's, you know, consistently been shown that human beings are at a core value against violence to other human beings. It's not within our nature until we hit a certain level of disconnection, of breaking those relationships. And so Indigenous thought and philosophy always centers around what we call connection. Another way to say it is relationship. and how to instill that relationship, how to instill those connections within their children, in relationship to themselves, in relationship to their land, and in relationship to the community at large. How does it function?
Okay, I want to get to that more. I just want to take a little moment here to say that you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is Political Perspectives. And the guests for this first half hour are Linda Rudnick of Earth and Spirit Council, and on the phone, Salvatore Gensarelli, who spent over 20 years learning the spiritual ways of the Lakota Sioux and wrote A Man Among the Helpers to bring their message to the modern world. He'll be in Portland this weekend, and you can find out more on the Earth and Spirit Council Facebook site. Okay. But anyway, so let's get back to that. So you're saying that it's about connection. And like, I just actually saw something that a rat left alone in a cage will choose to drink the water that has heroin in it. But if rats are in a big group in a cage and they're having a good time and there's toys and girl and boy rats and lots of fun, they don't drink the heroin water. They drink the plain water because they're connected and involved. And that sort of addiction itself seemed to be something connected with disconnection. And so is that kind of what you're talking about again? I mean,
yes. Yep. It's again, this is another version of the same pattern that they've produced in this study, where, you know, as human beings, our neurology is built around nature. It's built around connection. I mean, the neurons connecting to one another is just another kind of physical example of that, you know, but our system is designed to be within nature and be within that relationship of nature. Our system is designed to, you know, through that process, to come into self-awareness and to deepen that in empathy and compassion and love and, you know, all the virtues and attributes that we would really identify as healthy and good for humanity. And in removing ourselves from that or being forced out of that, you know, which is a typical pattern, you know, where another group that has gone through that disconnection process then goes and colonizes another group because it's no longer about relationship, it's now about resources, that then we force that pattern upon others, which is, you know, as we know, the history of humanity over the last few hundred years, especially in North America, you know. So in this systemic disease process, what has happened is it keeps spreading, and that as we remove ourselves from all the things that we find at a core level nurturing, we begin to demonstrate various sicknesses. A lot of times that starts with emotional and mental illnesses, but of course will progress into physical illnesses if it's allowed to go that far. So, you know, coming back into what does it mean to be into a relationship with nature? What does it mean to be connected to one another and ourselves in this really healthy way? And what facilitates that in the highest way? And that's when we get into these core principles of how to connect with nature. With the groups that I work with, what we call that is deep nature connection core routines. We also get into how do we reconnect through what is oftentimes identified as ceremonial or ritualistic processes, which use really nature itself, elemental forms of nature, and takes us through a process of working with that so that we can come back into a relationship with ourselves and nature and thereby others.
And that's that purification, right, you talked about earlier, the Inipi?
Yes, yep. That's one version of it. Yeah, that's one. And, you know, in my search for this, you know, looking at what we would call transcultural universal processes around that, looking at how do these groups, indigenous groups across the world, utilize reconnection tools such as, you know, what is typically called the sweat lodge, which is known in the Lakota process as Inipi, or life within, or they live within, is the translation of that. How does that show up? You know, because that's actually one of those universal processes, like the European sauna. You know, wherever you go, you find that indigenous people have a way through heat, through steam, to purify, to come back into relationship with the elements of fire, water, stone, and air. And it's in one sense very simple, but in another sense, it's incredibly powerful means to come back into that connected relationship. And if the group is already having a full vital culture, then what those tools are often used for is not just connection, but what I would call connection optimization. You know, it's the tweaks, and it's keeping everything in a very homeostasis kind of relationship between humanity, nature, and each other. So there's, and you know, INIPI or the sweat lodges is one process, you know, one process that, you know, I found shows up across the world. You know, song and dance is another one. There's many others, but these are the processes that indigenous people maintain their relationship with the world.
Yeah. And so, do you see that this can actually work in the modern world the way it is, or we need a transformation of the modern world? And
yeah.
And would that be possible through this kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing that you know, my teacher and what was shown was that this is absolutely essential. And it's not really so much as it's adapting it to the modern world. It's finding ways that it can be incorporated to heal the modern world. The modern world as it is normal. You know, this is what we're taught when we're children. Even though we as children oftentimes can identify that there's something wrong with the scenario, but we're told to grow up. We're told to adapt. We're told not to have these dreams or these longings, and that this is the way it is. And eventually, if this is accepted as that reality, then, you know, there's still something that's missing within that adult person. So what we call normal, in my assessment of that, it is actually a disease process, and that this disease process is passed on from generation to generation like this. And so looking for how do we incorporate the tools of reconnection and the processes of reconnection into the modern world to actually create a systemic healing that we all really need to be a part of. And investing into that, you know, with the understanding that once you've experienced the connection, once you've experienced even that on the most simplest level, oftentimes those longings are met. Oftentimes the longings of that space within us that is really wanting something, and we don't know what. Once we come into real deep relationship with nature, once we've come into really deep relationship through nature to ourselves, and knowing that this also actually creates a structural framework of what we identify as indigenous societies or cultures, that all the longings are met.
So it's like that, then the longing, like that the advertisements are feeding us, you know, you'll be happy if you have this new coat or that brand new car, blah, those just lose their power or allure.
Yep, absolutely. You know, because we understand that, yes, we need a certain level of materialism. Yes, we need certain baseline needs covered, but our desire is actually not for that. Our desire isn't for that bigger house or that bigger car, because anyone that has gone through that fully recognizes, I believe, you know, working with people that are even, you know, very wealthy and very adapt to the modern system, that they still have that longing. They still have that desire. And they'll even say, you know, it's not houses. It's not how many rooms does your house have. It's not the newer car that's going to fill that longing. It may temporarily kind of alleviate it and give you some joy and happiness, but over the long run, it's not actually answering that desire. It's not fulfilling that need within us. So what we've shown consistently in the experiment with the rats is just one version of that. You know, if you take a rat and you put them into that box where they can eat and they can choose between, you know, a drug, or they can choose between fresh water that's not a drug, they will consistently actually take the drug, and as a matter of fact, what they've also shown is that they'll take the drug until they actually die.
That's when they're alone and sad.
Yeah.
And disconnected.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if you take that same animal, you know, and you put that animal into an environment that meets all of their longings and all of their needs, what they called, actually, I think in that study, Rat Park Heaven. And given that option between, you know, this substance that would take them out of that reality, or water, you know, and food that was nourishing that would keep them in that reality, they consistently, even if they were quote unquote addicted to the drug, would go and just nourish health healthily and then live in that, you know, with happiness, really, you know, as much as we can measure that, but they would be satisfied and they would be alive. And, you know, we're not that far removed from that if you really look at it. You know, we're not that far, not to say we're rats, but we are animals. We're beings. We're creatures of nature. And so, you know, we have these same biological processes and in some ways the same neurological processes. So when we're actually met in our longings, you know, in a true way, not in a superficial, temporary fashion, and that, you know, we find that, you know, we look for the longing and then we do things like we become workaholics or, you know, again, the drug addict kind of principle. We become alcoholics or, you know, sexaholics or whatever the terminology is, but we're looking for connection.
Right.
Ultimately, we're looking for connection.
Right. And actually, Linda, you had another thing you wanted to mention?
Well, yes. What Sal's talking about, our desire for connection to other people, to belong, is kind of summed up in the Lakota phrase, metakiowaisen, which means we are all related. And that's related to other people, to all living sentient beings, to our oldest relatives, the stone people. And at the, in terms of getting in for the Friday night talk, the best way would be going directly to Brown Paper Tickets and just searching for Earth and Spirit Council, and it'll take you right to it.
Okay, that's good. And but basically, could you talk just in the last couple of minutes a little bit more about Benjamin Godfrey Chips? He was your teacher. You after you had your vision, you ended up working with him somehow.
Yeah. So in my experience, you know, so I have this moment when I'm at the age of 15 where. And it wasn't looked for. You know, this is another kind of qualification of why I call it a vision. I wasn't really looking for anything. You know, I was just a typical teenage boy at the time, you know, running around, skateboarding, going to school, you know, doing the typical teenage type of activities at that time. And then this happened. And it was like a flash, you know. It was a lot of information. It was a lot of understanding. And there's actually a terminology around it that typically happens when a person as a child has enough deep nature connection. This is an unusual event in a connected culture, but it is typically viewed as an unusual event in the modern culture because of all the things that we just talked about. But because my parents raised us in a certain way and I had these certain nature level of nature connection and relationships that with nature, that this allowed this moment of understanding to take place. And even though there was like this deep understanding without being able to name it, without being able to explain it as I am doing now, I wasn't sure how to go about this. You know, I didn't know what to do. So immediately what I began to do is go out into nature because I knew that was the key, that was an answer. And the longing, the calling, instinctual calling that I had was to go up into this mountain, this nearby mountain where we used to live, and on this flat plateau on top of the mountain that overlooked this the view to the west, you know, and I'd continually go up there almost daily and watch. And over time, what I began to realize is I needed a human teacher. I needed somebody to actually explain this, like, you know, there was an understanding, but I needed, you know, to be on that human level of who knows this and how can I learn. And within about 3 months after that, this Lakota man from the Pine Ridge Reservation living near the town of Wombly, South Dakota, ends up in Massachusetts, where I was living at the time, you know, about 1,900 miles away, and basically shows up at the doorstep of this farm that I was working at, you know, helping learn actually herbs at the time, you know, herbal medicine. And he starts doing ceremony. And at first it's introducing us to, you know, the concepts and whatnot. And I'm not really even sure if what this is about.
Okay.
But it's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fascinated.
We're going to probably be running out of time here.
Real quickly, I can say he did some ceremonies. I was very, very impressed, and I became his helper almost immediately. And after
spent
that,
decades with him. And if people want to find out more about this, it's there are these workshops happening Friday night, and
the talks on Friday and the workshops on Saturday.
The talk on Friday, and go to Facebook.
Well, go to Brown Paper Tickets.
Brown Paper Tickets,
and just type in a search for Earth and Spirit Council.
Earth and Spirit Council, okay, and or also Facebook, Earth and Spirit Council. But I want to let listeners know you're tuned to, and thank you so much, Salvatore, for being on the phone with us, and thank you, Linda. Salvatore Geroncelli, who spent over 20 years and with the Lakota Sioux and wrote a book, A Man Among the Helpers. He'll be here this Friday and Saturday. You're tuned to KBOO Portland Political Perspectives. Linda Rudnick of the Earth and Spirit Council is also here with us, and I'm Stephanie Potter, and thanks for Tammy for her great engineering, and thank you for listening.
And don't forget to support KBOO.
Yes.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
This is KBOO, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at 10 o'clock. Chris Andre will be hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. We got Flashpoints at 10:15 featuring Max Blumenthal speaking on the 51-day war, ruin, and resistance in Gaza. And at 11 o'clock, we got the food show. But coming up, we're going to hear a small short segment from TUC Radio that features a talk by Professor Ricardo Winkelmann on the melting of Antarctica. Stay tuned.
TUC Radio.